Okay, so I'm going to organize the playing of this. It's all ready to go. You hear Carolyn and Barbara Ann in December 2009 go up the top of the mountain that we live on the side of. And all kinds of neat things happen with Ion's guidance. Melting Titanium number 37, December 22nd, 2009.
Would Ion like to comment on our Haleakala experience? I went with Barbara Ann and Leslie.
Okay, all right. What happened?
Haleakala is the mountain behind us.
Yeah. Well, and the seance that was performed was in the winter solstice, which allows the winter solstice to become a ceremonial cleansing. And that's what that's supposed to be about. All right. So it was very effective and very wonderful and very apropos. And what happens is it becomes a fluid cleansing. Now, sometimes you have a detox cleansing, don't you? Well, it's supposed to work the same way. And then your elevation of highness also elevates your awareness. And it also gives you a different perspective of your parameter of your world.
Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course. Now, we say that way, and you go, oh, well, it's even larger than that. You feel on top of the world because you are.
I was saying to Barbara Ann that we're in the center of the universe. Hawaii was blown up first into an island, so we're at the top of that, and I got the perspective of seeing all the islands around it.
It's also, your particular one is one of those dodecahedron points inside the planet, too. That's a sidebar. Sorry, Bob, we couldn't resist. T-H-E-R-O-N. Theron.
Theron physics.
We should tell the audience that this is the tallest rock in the world. It's a few hundred feet taller than Mount Everest when you count it from the bottom of the sea.
Well, everything you count from the bottom of the sea, Bob. It's just that Mount Everest isn't close to the sea.
So you could.
They lose out.
Yeah, so you could say everything is equally tall because all goes to the center of the earth, in a sense.
Yeah.
It's the part about it.
No. You'd have to say it this way. You'd have to say certain things are further away from the center of the earth than other things. If your perspective is going to be gone from that space, so there's no false premise, it's if you're at the top of your mountain, you are further away from the center of the earth than, say, New Orleans.
And the point is?
If that's how you gauge your height, is your distance away from the middle. Because it's not a perfect sphere.
From the middle of the earth?
Yes. But you don't know where it is. But you also haven't even been to all the bottoms of the sea. So, you know, let's have that race to space and really get it worked out. We don't know what's in our own backyard, and yet we want to know what's in Asia Minor.
Why did we go to outer space before water space?
Because it's an anomaly that can't be.
Which one is an anomaly?
The leagues and the sea aren't appropriate for your science. They know the bottom of the sea is there. They don't know what's outside space. They know that the sea has a floor, so it doesn't require any research. But they don't know where the end of space is. But they know if they keep going, they will hit the bottom. Well, in space, that's not the case.
So that's the anomaly.
It is the anomaly, and it's a conundrum that will bite you in the butt until you figure out that there is no time. And once you figure out that there is no time, then yes, you can jump to those spaces. Uh-oh, spaces. Uh-oh. Now you're taking us to a new place.
Yeah.
Well, we may have been leading the witness just a little bit. Now we'll take a little bit of that for you. But once you come to the place that space is not a span of time, space is not a span of time. So you cannot use a time factor. That's why you can't go to Mars much. That's why you lose planets often. That's why you can't go visit Jupiter to see if you like the climate or not. It's because you don't have a time and time year travel to get you there. Well, if that wasn't a span of a space, then you could.
What is the relevance of the solstice? What does that do?
It's where you turn your back to the sun and you're your Earth turns its back to the sun, and the other half is full frontal nudity.
I want to know why that's a significant ritual in Native cultures. Why do they make a big deal?
It's the natural balance of your contrast. You must have contrast. And that's what Carolyn's finding in her dirt with her dodecahedrons. The dirt's tired. He doesn't get a break.
And the dodecahedrons are energy valves or something.
Well, this points. But see, that physics, you're all crossways of it. So don't go making your life be about that because you haven't figured it out yet.
Wow. The pictures that I took of the sun rising, it looked pretty dodecahedron-y to me. This,
it does.
Pointing colored rainbow effects, the shafting off the sun as it's rising.
Well, they give you you can actually notice the curvature of the world if you look close.
In?
From that perspective of the photo.
Oh, wow. I mean, I just want to go up there again tomorrow and get some more pictures. I have a ton of them, but I wasn't seeing them.
Well, your camera was magical that day.
What do you mean magical?
It was picking up stuff that wouldn't be there otherwise.
It was
connected. Someone could come take those exact same pictures, and it wouldn't be the same.
Did Carolyn pick her camera, pick up the dodecahedral effect or something?
The magnetic pull did.
The magnetic pull of her camera?
No, her magnetic pull in that geographic area captured it digitally.
So
if it was easily taken a pad and a pencil and sketched it, it would have been the same effect, right?
Well, Carol's never drawn an image in her life, so...
Well, she's never had non-physical help in her like she does lately.
Okay, so we're talking about the solstice
so
in this meeting, and then the Yule log.
Well, the Yule log, here's why that worked. They turned their back on the sun. It's dark, it's dank, it's dreary. This is the winter solstice. It cut the biggest log that they could cut. They would set it on fire and have orgies and libations and parties as long as the fire was burning to keep the spirits at bay.
What spirits at bay?
Evil spirits, metaclopsical anomalies, wood elves, nymphs, every other strange foreign forbearing issue.
Okay, that brings up a question. Were they paranoid or were they justified in being worried?
They were justified.
There were evil spirits around.
We never said evil.
There were tricky tricksters.
Well, they were ununderstood. Therefore, if there's something you don't understand, it's an abomination before God.
Traditional culture makes it that way, right?
Well, yeah. If you don't understand it, it's an abomination before God.
And you tend to think it's evil. You bring in the concept
evil.
Of evil.
Yes, and if you have that evil long enough, then it becomes lived and it becomes the devil. But now, the Yule log, and that's what that was about. Well, it was, and also, in the wintertime, the dead of winter, they didn't have feed to feed their beasts, their cattle, their swine. Well, they didn't eat much swine, but their cattle. So they'd have to kill it, slaughter it, and eat it. So they'd have banquets and feasts and that kind of stuff, and it was wintertime. There was snow all over the place, so it would be easily preserved.
And that's what Christmas is referring to.
That's what the solstice, the 25th of December, was all about.
25th was the solstice?
Solstice is called the 21st.
Well, sorry, it's the 25th.
It always is?
Well, no. You have a timed element that's never correct.
Mm-hmm.
So it does. It's from the 21st until the kings show up, which would be January the 9th.
That's the Yuletide season.
Well, as long as the log would burn.
And so they did start on the 21st.
Yes.
And then they, for a long span of experience, they timed December 25th as the solstice.
Yes, in the middle ground.
Yeah, I see.
Okay. Now, and so all this was going on, so that was that in abundant position. Well, it went on and went on and went on. So then they couldn't get people to stop it, so they blocked it out. They never discussed Jesus' birth, the Christian's Messiah. So then they decided to make it on the 25th, so it could be a festival of debauchery.
They had to fit Christ into what was already happening anyways.
But they couldn't outlaw it because people were still doing it, even if it went underground.
Now, when you say orgies, did marital relations, marital contracts give up during this period? period of no rules.
Yeah, some call it lasciviousness, some call it debauchery. But that's all in the eye of the beholder, you see.
And you didn't have to bring in concerns about hygiene or herpes or...
They didn't do that anyway.
They didn't know anything.
They didn't know that.
No.
So therefore, they had no trouble with it. It's only when you introduce the antimicrobial that the microbial becomes a problem.
Except, you know, there's a lot of talk about how people back then would get a cut and it would get infected and they'd die a lot easier than they do with antibiotics.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's, I mean, the stories I read, I don't know how accurate they are. I don't know if people are just imagining that's what happened.
That's how most everything does happen, doesn't it?
People imagine it, right?
So it's not true what you were just saying, Carol.
Very little is.
Nothing is true, pretty well.
We don't have a problem with truth because in our world, without any contrast, we can move through the feeling place of every aspect and decide how close it is to a match for us without adding any other attention to the whole dynamic. It's when you start adding in the dynamic, that's when you're a liar and you're telling the truth, and then you swear to tell the truth, whole truth, nothing but the truth, except you God. Well, yes, he will. But it's your empirical reference is all based upon your place of where your lying eyes placed you in the scene of the crime. You know, it was true, the world was flat. And we go, no, it was round. Yes, it was flat. Ask them. They had proof. Scientists proved it.
Why were they concerned about whether the earth was flat or not? See, even thinking about that is
exactly
strange.
That's exactly correct. The same way where you try to figure out that the world is round, and then you find that it isn't a perfect ball.
So ancient cultures, before writing came in, did not have the idea the world was flat.
Right.
It's a writing, what McCullough said, the visual effect. If it's on the eye, starts to look at the flatness.
It's two-dimensional.
Yeah. To explain what I mean by visual, people are dancing and living in a world of speech and many senses, and they don't have writing. Definitely start bringing writing. It freezes the thought on one image, and then that becomes something reinforced by the priest. And then that gets you into thinking, well, where are we? And we're emphasizing the eye a lot, not the other senses. The other senses are engaged in society, but the priestly big picture is around the eye, and then that starts looking at the world as flat because the eye, McClune said, is a neutral sense. See, in a neutral, flat space. You follow that thinking, Ian?
Yes, we do. However, it's interesting that you have your two-dimensional experience done from a rounded ocular nerve.
Is that where the rods and cones come in?
Behind that, yes. They're within this circular, almost round spherical nodule.
Dion said if our labyrinthine minds need a rule about an image, you prefer the spherical image.
Yes.
Why did we discover it was this is the time of the printing press, which you would think, McClone says, it heightens the eye, but we didn't enhance the flat effect of the world. We actually started to see it was a sphere. So that contradicts the point.
Right.
So why did we start calling it a sphere? Because it is.
Contrast, so you could screw yourself out of your knowing, so you could spend the next million years figuring it out, where you came from, so you'd know where you're going, so you'd know when you got there. Because otherwise you're not sure.
The spherical image we have today of the Earth is a complication within the problem of the image of time.
You're right, okay? We don't say that just point blank often.
That's what you just said. You said...
Well, but let's turn it around. So what you're saying is that if we left the world two-dimensional, flat, we'd have been better served?
No, they're all within the eye, but you just made a statement that you correct the flatness into a spherical, but you're still operating on time. Okay, I go here and I'll get over there because it's round. You're orienting yourself visually still. You just have a more accurate image of your experience. But if there are parallel worlds and all this kind of subtleties going on, then the world is not spherical.
Right.
That's what I thought you meant when you said the spherical image came in and caused all kinds of other contrasts.
It started making time zones.
Yeah, it reinforced it actually helped time. Now, that fits into the printing. It actually did enhance visual space, but on a different level than the flat image. The spherical still worked within and helped the illusion of time, because it gave you something to divide up and really get lost in time.
J.W. had great fun playing with the international timeline, where you gain a day and lose a day. He had so much fun. It would be back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth from the pictures, and even the phones would register it as a different day. You were on Tuesday, then you're in Wednesday. You're in Tuesday, then you're in Wednesday. You're in Tuesday, then you're Wednesday. Back and forth, back and forth. So almost you were all, and finally he had to stop and go, wait a second, I think I'm aging myself by doing this. So he quit.
He quit what?
Jumping back and forth, just to have him scare him playing with it, because it was almost like the time element was undoing his timeliness.
Where is the international dateline?
One on the edge of Hang Seng, one on the edge of Hong Kong, one on the edge of Korea. Straight line. It's an anomaly place, you know.
And so he did this more than once? Like in one time, he would go back and repeat it when he was in the area.
Right. Yeah. It's fun to play with.
And then he got tangled up in it and said, no, I'm not going to do that anymore.
Oh, we don't have to go home till Wednesday. Okay, now it's Tuesday. Okay, well, we got to go home tomorrow, so you step back over and go, oh, no, we got to go home today. It's Wednesday. No, let's see. Well, when do we check out? Oh, wait, I can save $9,000 if I go a step back a day right before I go, because then it'll be a day before, so I've stayed a day less than I did before, so that'll save $9,000 for the night at the hotel. Hey, that's fun. And if we keep going backwards, they'll owe us $63,000. Let's do that. Just being cheeky and play. You see, it's just play. It's just play. But after a little while, he's like, wait a second. If time is that easy to matriculate, maybe we better not fool with that at all.
So do you want to go back to dodecahedron, Carol?
Love to. Mean it.
Okay, so we did the Yuletide.
Stop.
We did the Yuletide.
Quiet.
And that's
Yule log.
Stop.
Yule log.
Mm-hmm. Okay, the dodecahedron. Is it encompassing the whole island?
It's one point. The center of the dodecahedron is in the center of the Earth. Maui is just one point.
And Maui is one point, okay.
Well, the Hawaiian Islands is one point.
Is there one earthly dodecahedron or more?
Just one. The dodecahedron is inside the confines of the spherical of the Earth.
Is a dodecahedron a product of the writing phase of culture that people think it is something beyond the writing medium?
It is absolutely beyond that.
So is that what sacred geometry tries to get at? They may not get
it. Could. It would.
If it could, but it, we forget the, forget those concepts. Is a dodecahedron even geometry?
It is. It's what sets your grids. It's how you line up your parallels. It's how you
calculate
your up and down.
Parallel worlds?
No, the latitude and longitude.
Yes, but see, Bob was not as weird as that sounded. Because if you go back to the look at 6 o'clock so you don't end up on your head, what are those things in airplanes? They call them altimeters. That let you know how you are within the perspective of the world. Up or down, and then you have the thing that balances you that sets where your horizon is so you don't land on your head. Right?
Mm-hmm. Right. So the dodecahedron is involved in traveling to other worlds.
Well, of course it is, and it also is in your gyroscope or gyroscope technology.
Yeah. The gyroscope
is confounded. It is confounded into your, what do you call the metachlor on your website?
The metachlor, what's that?
The dodecahedron in the pyramids with the little man standing in it.
Oh, yeah, the Merkada or something. Is he standing in a dodecahedron?
Yes.
Okay.
If you looked at it from all sides, it would be.
The point where Haleakala is, it's not necessarily the top of the dodecahedron.
Right.
It's any point. Who knows what point it is? If it's a gyroscope, then you can't figure out what is the top or down of the dodecahedron?
Sure you can from your flat linear space of understanding of time. Sure you can. That's the point. That's the false premise. You are exactly right. You can't. But yet you judge where you are in your span of time to see how you calculate within the retrospect of the retrograde of whether or not Mercury's rising or not. You get to the age of Aquarius, and then what do you do?
Is there any school systems, knowledge systems that know what you're talking about?
No. They've confounded them, but they've never given it enough energy to notice. But don't worry, you'll have a little contrast. You'll find out that time doesn't work that way, and then you'll prove it, and then you'll have to undo all your stuff. But that's already happening with your textbooks now. They're reprinting textbooks, and before they get to the schools, they're already out of date.
Well, we didn't hear enough about what happened to Carolyn up on the mountain.
Byron talked about it being a chakra alignment and, as you said, a cleansing for the winter. And I come home and Bob's cleansing all the mucus out of his body, so that was kind of cute. So that means Bob was there with me, I think.
Can we say that Mike holds a response to Carolyn being up there?
You can.
Doesn't have to be. What is it that I got? Is it normal cold virus or some other dimensions to it?
There's something you were chasing and you finally caught it.
And what was that?
The cold.
I was chasing a cold. Was there something else that was symbolically chasing?
No.
Why was I chasing a cold?
Because you caught it.
I caught it before I started chasing it?
Apparently.
And why did I want that in my experience?
Because it brings you contrast and you can revel in the beauty of the deliciousness of this winter solstice because you felt guilty because you turned your back on the sun.
And how was I doing that?
Engaging the winter solstice.
So that's why people get colds in Christmas.
Ta-da!
Put that in your medical book, Carolyn.
The total biology folks say it's a resolving of a conflict between people.
Yes, and the only way that's true, that's like saying every single time there's relief when you stop beating yourself over the head with a hammer.
And a cold is a kind of relief?
Yes, it causes contrast that moves you into health and fullness. Does your head feel pretty full, Bob?
Not greatly, but it is there, yes. And you recommend drinking salt for anybody in that case or just in mine?
No, and we didn't say, you said drink salt, Bob. We didn't say drink salt. We said ingest more salt.
Oh, ingest, right. And you would recommend that to anybody or just me in my circle?
Well, everybody that'll do it, that doesn't have something against it.
Everybody, that'll be still.
That's the cure to the common cold. Don't chase it. And then you got it.
Oh, wait, you meant the salt is the cure or don't chase it yet?
Don't chase it, but salt is what you do if you can't help. If you fall in the abyss, then salt's your way back out of it. But if you don't want to get in the abyss, then you can avoid the salt too, and you're just good.
So, Ion, any images or responses in the audience?
Do we take the salt or not? How do we not catch the cold? And, of course, we already said don't chase it. And then your immunity becomes only in question, even in your alien state, like your alien immunity or diplomatic immunity. The immunity with your resistance value is based upon your expression of where you are in your process. We didn't say journey, we said process. So if you get low or something's going on or you're increased stress or blah, 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 or you feel guilty because you turned your back on the sun during the winter solstice, then your body responds by allowing you to catch up with a cold.
Where?
Rhinovirus.
People are not aware that they feel guilty when they turn their back on the sun.
Right. But yet they get blue in the wintertime and they can't wait till summer.
They may not be thinking of it in modern mental states, but it was a factor in the more less technologized time spans.
It still is. Just because you're tweeting your life away doesn't mean that you have any less expressionable experiences in your life. But you can activate a rhinovirus by tweeting about your condition.
Were cultures that didn't have tweeting and computers and all that we have today, cars and everything, were they aware that they might get colds because they were turning guilty?
Yes, if they did, like your Howard Hughes, you become a germaphobe. How do you catch germophobia?
Keep thinking about germs.
Right, and they're getting you. And then you can't wear clothes because how do you know they were properly washed? And you have to have the right number of towels, and you have to have to. It just becomes this catalog long-standing, lengthy thing of processes that you require. I mean, people are weird about that, even though subconsciously they do them and they're not even aware of it. And that's okay. If you don't give it any attention, it doesn't matter. I mean, the same way you call a light switch, but it turns the light off as many times as it turns it on. Identically.
Okay, back to Haleakala. Again, Barbara Ann, I'm getting my information about this whole process from her. She said that going up the mountain and the act of just driving up is aligning the chakras. Is there anything to that?
Nope, it is not. It can make you more aware that you have chakras. But if you're completely tuned in and tapped out, then yes, an ascension will elevate your degree of questioning your capacity as a spiritual being. Same thing will happen if you go bungee jumping. So the chakras, why would you need to align your chakras if they were not effective? That's the only time you'd need to align them. If they're out of whack, that's not your only issue, is it? But if it's what gets you through the night, yeah, move up there. It'll do you good.
So what's going on at the top of Haleakala for people who go up there to do ceremony? How does it serve them?
Leave the ceremony out of it, and we'll just tell you what's going on in that geographical location.
Yeah, I just meant for people who were looking for an experience more than just to take a picture.
Okay, here's what happens. When you're at these vortexes or points of, well, let's do it from a science. We love science.
No, you don't.
Let's take a little science. Take some instrumentation. You'll find anomalies. You'll find a shear in barometric pressure. From the last 10 degrees of your ascension, you'll find the barometric pressure shears just to an alarming rate.
Shears meaning goes down or up?
Way up or way down. Shear.
Yeah.
It fluctuates. You can have a barometer and take one step closer to the what you call the crater, those things you like to fall through, but one step closer to that, and it'll drop 6-7 millibars. It's unheard of. You also notice that your compass will go off a bit. There is a great magnetic distraction in these particular points. Well, anytime you have a heightened sense of arousal, that's what you gauge to how you're doing. So if you're in a heightened sense of arousal, then you notice your body responding. If you've got snot in your third eye chakra, that'll let you notice it, so it'll clear. So, if that's what does it for you, great.
What happened to me up there?
You were in a very interesting place of trying to compassionately engage with your outside Bob friends. Mm-hmm. I mean, because you abide Bob, but he is your bud. I mean, you care for him as much as anybody else, but maybe a little more. But it's good to get away. So you can enjoy the deliciousness that is Bob. And then you're also having that particular engagement. Look how it all started. It was from a running late issue, rah, 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 little distraction, little what now, sorry, didn't mean it, negotiated your generosity. All of it came together in one crescendo and then got solved because it was like, we still made it. It was still okay. No love's labor's been lost. It's fine. It's fine. It's fine. It's fine. Let's sort of go with it. Mm-hmm. And then it was. And it did. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, what it also did was, is it put you all in the same place. In the ceremony. Lord, yes, leave it all for the ceremony. In that ceremony, sometimes that can align you where you're not distracted outside of yourself with other human creators. Doesn't take a ceremony to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? If you all take a laxative at the same time, they won't work at the same time, but they'll all work.
Okay, I take a break and move this forward 2 points. Okay, we continue.
See, the rocks will cry out. If you don't come into the acknowledgement that you are the creator and your deity,
mm-hmm.
the rocks will start praising you. The rocks rocks will cry out if you don't.
If I don't, they'll cry out.
Yes, if you don't acknowledge your power as a deity, and some would say, praise the Lord, well, we do too. But what they're calling the Lord and what we're calling the Lord are different lords. All right, but if you don't, the rocks will respond. They'll cry out. The angels will come forth. They will shake your world. They will shake it from stem to stern. You have to come into your place of your delicious power. And anytime you don't, you're going to be less than. And anytime you're less than, you're going to cause more contrast. Anytime you cause more contrast, you're going to cause more disease or more disentanglement. Because you tangle it. And if you can't untangle it, then you make more tangles to tangle. You make it untangled.
And you're saying the Philippine volcano's going off as the rock's crying out.
It is, isn't it?
Oh, my gosh. Mm.
We told you way before to
yeah.
be aware.
Yeah.
Now, did we say move? No. Did we say run? No. Did we say pay attention? Yes. And did you pay attention? Yes. And is it showing up in your experience? Yes. And is there a reason for it empirically that it be referenced before it happened? Well, you need that damned beforehand knowledge, or it isn't so. Well,
mm-hmm.
Okay, good. That's perfectly what we've been talking about all night long. So, throw in your rocks, just like your dice in Vegas. If it aligns your vulnerable spirituality, then of course it will be absolutely effective, and those rocks can become very great toters of empirical power in your period of predicament.
Bob, stop breathing into the mic.
Stop breathing, Bob. You're breathing way too much. You're non-physical. You don't have to breathe.
Yeah, so I can throw my rocks into the dirt and imbue them with power all I want, but that's not what's going to do it for me. Or
well, it can. It can.
As long as I understand that it's about acknowledging my own power. It's not about acknowledging the power of the rocks.
That's exactly right. And if you want to store that power residually, isn't that called kinetic energy? You could have also put it on the edge of the hill and let it roll down the hill, and as it rolled, it would have picked up velocity. So now these magical rocks can crush your skull in. Here's the bottom of the hill and it hits you in the head. Well, so now we weren't trying to tangle you up. We were being
soft. I know. You're just giving other references. That's fine.
Well, but you also could say the problem with it. Here's the problem. If there is a problem, there's not one. But if there was a problem, well, you could just as easily convince yourself that you need a 1,600-pound quartz.
Yeah, I know.
And you
got
to carry it around everywhere you go. And we have to consult the 8 tons of crystal, and we got to see how it glows.
I know, and you know that I've never been attached to anything.
Well,
so
we jokingly call those crystal liquors.
Yeah.
And there's no problem with that. If they, you know, swallow them, they'll help your digestion.
Right.
It'll
yeah.
work you right out. It'll work out. It'll come out.
Right.
Work. So if that's the case, it's not necessary. Sometimes people do it with precious stones, like diamonds. They put curses on them. They put blessings on them. They get freaky if they lose their special diamond that's imbued with some specialness. People do it with their wedding rings and circles. Now, those are your beats. They're not our beats. And it was not in your system, but it's an easy thing. It's not a problem. All right. So those beats are important. They can build up your position of understanding and make you stop and think about why these things happen. You can affect your electronic bodies, but you don't have to have a rock to be able to do that. Now, yes, you certainly can, okay? Prisms are fabulous. You can have ocular lenses that increase your ability to see into space. So we're not against the thing, but that's not the reason why you have power.
Yeah.
You have power, and it shows up in what you imbue with it. JW does the same thing with by not breaking things. Things in his world just don't get broken, literally. They just don't. And he doesn't push against it or make that a bit the thing, bring it in here so it'll be safe, so it doesn't get broken here. He's not even pushing against that. But things bounce around in his house and still don't break. So, you know, and he's got enough stuff that it would be significant. You know what I mean? It's not like he got one pot and the whole ringing it back home is what we're trying to do, ringing it back home so it'll all make sense. Your vortexes of your dodecahedrons, he understands the significance of the 19th into 21st parallel, into the 30th parallel, and the ones that you're connected to. He understands how this world is lined up in its matrix of grids. And so he just pays attention to that. That's why he would never choose to live on the equator, ever. He would never choose to live or imbue most of his energies in one of the pole or the other, North Pole, South Pole. He leans into the what you call northern hemisphere rather than the southern, because there's a 33 on the southern also.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at what goes on in there on that, it's almost the opposing value. If you look at it that way,
mm-hmm.
Well, you don't have to, but he does. So that's why it works for him. Doesn't have to have rocks or doesn't have to have any other problems to make that so. But in his geography, those are very groovy as rocks as any. So you can have remembrance or touchstones that are very important that you can imbue with deliciousness. He's got a couple of carnelian that he drains, literally. Drains, and we'll explain that so you'll know. The carnelian, or that particular element known as carnelian, sometimes has rudiments of jasper. He can carry them in his pocket, and they have an orangey gaze
mm-hmm.
to their shade,
mm-hmm.
and as money flows freely and easily to him, they turn white,
mm-hmm.
and he saves them. And he's got a great big pile of them, and he throws them in one of those great big vases. People use them to do it like they're to hold flowers, frogs to hold flowers
mm-hmm.
in their vases. When they get completely white, he's drained all the goody out of them. He just throws them in the pot. And there's a great big pile of them that he drains because they don't last very long. And you can't do that. Try it. And if he carries them, once they turn white, they'll evaporate. And the people who do his laundry, he doesn't have a clue because he's never done a laundry. Doesn't know what a laundry, doesn't know where the thing is other than the box that you throw them into that heats the socks. It'll evaporate. They will literally go to dust. And that's his energy, not the carnelian's energy. But he didn't have a rule against it either. He's just easy with it. It is what it is, so it's not a problem. And he has great fun with it. Now, is that the moniker that he lives his life by? No. If he doesn't tote his little rock around, is the money not going to flow to him? No. You see, it is kind of, do I want to wear a red dress or a green dress? Well, what difference does that make? Well, it's how you feel. Okay, go with that. Good. There you go. So all these anomalies that you're discussing aren't deal breakers, but they are part of the deal. Some people can catch a cold and get rid of a cold and then catch a cold and get rid of a cold and then keep a cold all the time. Do they have to have surgery and all these different things that they start flushing the sinuses and polyps and breaking the nose for that configuration of surgeries and
mm-hmm.
rhinoplasty and all kinds of things? So the point is that does not have to be your experience, but it just as easily could be as not if you embrace them. And as you embrace them, then you don't have to be in a vortex more so than another or over another. It doesn't have to be anything like that, but it certainly can. Because if that dirt up on top of your mountain was any more special than the other dirt, why didn't you bring home a 50-pound sack of it, and then maybe your flowers would have grown? If that's so special, then why not go plant your stuff up there and then go up there and visit it, and it should just take over and make a jungle and recapture all of the island. If that be the case, the moral to the story is you should have taken Bob, but he could have gotten rid of his rhinovirus right there from the increased magnetic pull that was the deliciousness that would have been the winter solstice, and he could have taken it head on, and then he wouldn't have had to go through this disconnection, but then he would have never asked the question and never learned the information, and if he never learned the information, then he never would have gotten to the place of coming up past it and understanding how the stones work and how the whole capacity works in this whole system that he's been pushing against or not pushing against, but have creepily clogged up his chakras that the ceremony should imbue him, and we need to baptize him place where he can be healed. Be healed. Come out, thou vile and evil demonic spirit of conception. Conception. Not deception. Conception. Because now it's been contrived. The world contrives as the world contrives it. Contrives it. So now we dance through that whole little process just to come back to full circle that, yes, there's a difference in the magnetic pull on the top of your mountain. Yes, it is a delicious place. Yes, it gives you a different perspective. Yes, it brings you closer to your power as a creator that you're witnessing this marvelous earth responding to your command. Yes, it lines you up perfectly, but you had to hurry a little faster than everybody else to get the full Monty version of it, but yet you knew it was important enough to do, and you did, and it was. Even though you missed the abyss, good for you, girl. And got all that wonderfulness. Now, if you want to have a ceremony, you can sing or pray or piss or spit or whatever you want to do. It's perfectly all right. And if at the end of the day, if you're more attached to the power that says you, honey, yeah, get you a six-pack of it. Absolutely. But you could just as easily do that by your water's edge, playing with the turtles, pierced or otherwise.
Let's acknowledge the audience, see if they have any comments.
They're rallying with the ease that these information processes are being embraced. They're easily saying, wow, that's great. Wow, that's great. You mean it's that easy? Yes. You mean it's that good? Yes. You mean it could get better? Yes. You mean, well, we're going to get over it? No, you're never going to get through. This ain't a job to get done. You're never going to get it done. It ain't done. It ain't over. Even if you make it be over, it's not over. And that overness isn't going to happen. If they're over, you can go under for a while, but you're still going to go. You're never going to be over. Okay? Now, they're just embracing the deliciousness that this is concept that they've known all their days but never embraced. They've calculated but never understood. They figured it but didn't know how to figure it. Once that comes into play, then they're going, you mean we are that powerful as an individual creator? And we say yes. If you say no, it's not, then your world gets more difficult because you've eliminated all your power points. If you're not powerful enough to get over it, well, then you have to wait for someone else to create it for you to get it by default. Well, that sucks. But many do. It's okay with us because we are patient. We're not even a doctor.
Any particular person that you want to single out, sending an image or resonating?
Thomas.
We've mentioned Tom before, I think. Or the name came up.
Yes. Thomas was asking about how the equinoxes affect the solstices.
Yeah, someone was asking that on our trip back to the mountain.
He wasn't with you, but yes. All right. The question then becomes very easy. An equinox is the split season. Okay, you have the autumnal and vernal. Well, the equinox is where you come to that cresting place of balance. The solstice is when you're the furthest point away from your source and the celebration thereof. And we can explain this way. You build a fire, and you face the fire, and your front side gets warm, and so if it's on a cold day, cold enough to have a fire, your back side will get cold. Well, if you turn, that's the solstice.
Turn around 180 degrees?
Correct. That would be your two solstices, summer solstice and the winter solstice. Okay, now the equinoxes would be if it was cold and you lay down on the ground next to the fire, okay? The equinoxes would be an equalizer that allows your whole beingness just to kind of be warm. It's the in-between places. We've described that in a very simple way, so that's the answer to the question. That the equinoxes are more subtle change. You don't notice the difference as much. But the solstices are one's very warm and one's very cold.
in summer and winter.
Very good.
Yeah.
Thank you. It's why they built Stonehenge.
They built Stonehenge around the equinoxes.
And solstices, yes.
Mm. Did they use the dodecahedron? No, they wouldn't know that.
Yes, they did.
Because they were given it?
What do you mean, given it? They've known all along. There's nothing new, Bob.
Oh, wait. The Stonehenge is built by people in the future, from the future.
Well, there is no future, and stop breathing.
Only if you have to embrace time. Basically, Bob, you've known it all along. You see, here, this is what's so fun, because we come back to this, and we've done this, maybe a half a time, not a complete time yet, but maybe a half time. As God, you have knowing of all. There's nothing that you hide from God. What do you hide from God?
Okay, so the knowledge systems, we said there was no...
There's only one.
Yeah, but you're God.
No, stop, wait, there's more than that. All this knowledge you're trying to figure out, you've already got. Otherwise, you wouldn't even know to figure it out. All these questions that you keep coming up with, how would you know to ask those questions if you didn't already have the answer? We've said all along, the problem is not the answer, the problem is the question.
Because the question supposes lack.
Absolutely. When you already know it.
Right, but you mentioned that the dodecahedral knowledge is not in any knowledge systems known, but that would be written down knowledge systems, I guess.
Well, there you go. That would be that timed printing press. They didn't have time to print it out to make
right.
it all line up to be the same. But that doesn't mean that the knowledge doesn't exist, because otherwise how would it be? How could it be found out if it didn't exist already? How could it be found out if it didn't exist? If it didn't exist, how are you going to find it? Well, wait.
If it didn't exist, you might find it.
How? If it doesn't exist, how could you find it?
Yeah, but you don't know it didn't exist.
Yes, you do.
You forgot.
You forgot. This is the best thing you've ever done so far, all total. Honest engine, think about this. You got to the dynamic that brought it all to a marvelous, sebaceous head.
Yeah.
It's causing enough pressure to get the corruption out so that it can be one. So then there's a reason now, for the very first time, with a logical progression of remembrance, that you have this non-physical, and you have this physical, and you can get them together and not undo the labyrinth of your mind or offend your mind, which is vapor locked in the anomaly of the maze of your labyrinth.
The knowledge that was used for Stonehenge, that was for people who wanted to create a system or do something with it, and they had forgotten that they were gods and didn't need to make a Stonehenge.
No. They enjoy Stonehenge. The Stonehenge was nothing other than their expression of appreciation that they knew when to plant, knew how the seasons roll, and they gave celebration. They gave celebration by piling up those rocks as a form of eternal remembrance, so that you damned cross-eyed creators could remember. Well, now you go to Stonehenge and lick it and can't remember why it was there for.
Right, so the knowledge of planting that they used around the Stonehenge was important to realize.
It told them when to plant.
And they couldn't rely on non-physical and not eat.
They did depend on non-physical, but they appreciated their attachment with non-physical so much that they built a celebration ground to remind them of how wonderful this experience called planting, sowing, and reaping is. Bob, do you know why they built the Washington Monument?
No.
Well, neither does anyone else. So what's it for? What's Stonehenge for? It's to bring you to the place of remembering. Well, what's the Washington Monument built for? Well, it was built in memorial to George Washington, your first United States president. But they made it in the form of a great big obelisk with weird Egyptian carvings and symbols and strange little dynamics that are wrapped into that kind of go,
and Stonehenge.
Yes, born from a formula view. So you won't forget. And that's the Washington Monument. Mommy, why do they call it the Washington Monument? Well, it reminds us of George Washington. Mommy, who's George Washington? Well, he was our very first president. Well, some would say king, but he didn't want to be known as king because that's what they were trying to get away from. So what they tried to get away from, they got back again, and so they elected their king. Oh, wait, that's how that goes with the lineage of the monarchy. Uh-oh, we have a problem here. Wait a minute. Well, we wore blue coats, not red coats. Okay, that's what you need to know. It's a blue coat, not a red coat, and you're the king, but we don't call you the king, so that's like a czar. Oh, okay, so good. So we're Russian, Mommy. No, we're American. Oh, okay, North American, South American, or Canadian. No, 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 we're just in this country that got away from the redcoats because we wanted to elect our king, but we really don't elect our king because we have electoral college, or like the pseudo price of how it flows with the monarchy. So really it is a monarchy, and that's how it all works. So let's build a monument to remind us of all this so we don't forget. And they build the monument, and no sooner they get the monument built, they forget what it's all about. But the monument stands.
People watch television programs to remember, maybe.
That doesn't work, because all they remind them of is which Viagra product is the best for their beingness. They don't use it from that. Even your History Channel, even your History International, even your National Geographic, even those other channels, they use it to press their nonsensical notion of the moment.
What channels were they? You mentioned.
Well, we're talking about what you call like educational print, National Geographic, History Channel, History International Channel. There's even a NASA channel that'll tell you all kinds of stuff.
So they are there to remind you.
Well, to enjoy and embrace things maybe that they hadn't known before. But if they don't know them or they can't be known, then this show isn't going to convince them. So then they use it as a shock therapy, that this alligator can eat this snake or this snake can eat this alligator. That's 20 feet long and explodes because it's more than congestion went up. Who needed to know that and why? Okay, they needed to know it and why. But that's the thing that was the deal breaker.
The alligator explodes?
The snake explodes from eating the big alligator.
Oh, snake, and then it dies.
Well, no, it lived, but it was in many pieces. The simple, easy way to flow with this is embrace the knowledge that you know. And if you don't care, don't push against the parts you don't care. Just let them be. A lot of things are that you don't understand. That's okay. Don't push against them unless you really want to have contrast regarding it. If you didn't know what a rhinovirus was, you could never catch one, could you? Because even if you caught one, you wouldn't know you had it.
Better not to know things sometimes.
If you didn't know what a rhinovirus was, how would you catch one? And if you did catch one, you didn't know what it was, how could it have any effect on you?
Yeah, well, the monument, the Washington Monument, if you didn't know what it meant, then it wouldn't have any effect on you.
And it doesn't.
But you know what it is.
Do you?
Because you asked the question, what's that monument?
Well, but who, what if they don't answer? What if, okay, Bob, what is Stonehenge?
I have images of it.
No, no. What was it for? It's a monument. What's it a monument of?
Of agricultural revolution.
Well, but that's only because you know that. But if you didn't know that, how would you answer the question?
Yeah, you wouldn't know.
Here you've got a country 234 years old, and you don't even remember what the Washington Monument's all about.
But because you have a question, if you did have a question about Stonehenge, that means you know the answer.
That is correct, and that's why it's still standing. That's the empirical reference that we're trying to get across. If they would have put the instructions on it, it would have been okay. And then we go, whoa. The Mayans tried that, and that sent you up for the apocalypse of the day. If they'd have been better off, if they'd have rubbed all that off before they left, then they wouldn't have had all this dynamic that they're embracing of this foolishness.
Or 2012.
Oh, is that what, 2012?
Yeah.
It's very significant.
But you're saying the Stonehenge didn't have instructions on it. That helped it stand.
It did. That's exactly correct.
Like the pyramids, all like all the seven wonders.
That's exactly correct.
So the creators intended that?
Well, they did, except for the lighthouse at Alexandria. They had too many instructions, so they knocked it down.
Okay, great. Thank you very much, Ayala. I think we're complete.
Well, how very wonderful. And it kind of went full circle. We want to thank Bob and Carolyn, our host. This is the Bob and Carolyn Melting Titanium Show, and we tried to stay on point. We did vary a bit, so pardon us, but our audience really loved it as we go inside and outside the dynamics that is Bob and Carolyn. And once we get those separated and divided out, guess what it becomes? The moniker in which, by which all human creators can live happily ever.
In this Christmas season, happy holidays to all.
Yes, and to all. And to all a Merry Christmas, and Merry Christmas to all. Good night.
And enjoy your Yule log orgies.
Yule log orgies. We do suggest, however, that just like those that celebrated the original holidays of the Yuletide season, do not drag the large Yule log into your house and set it on fire. We suggest you do it in the confines of your outsideness. It will serve you well.
Well, you served us well, and we appreciate it.
Yes, indeed. We are always enjoying